The question that you raised yesterday about the transition from impersonal to personal, it's there's a lot of that in what we're going to be discussing this morning. And it's fascinating. So we'll be covering text 21, 22, and 23. Just immediately connecting from what we covered yesterday. Reducing the influence of passion and ignorance is a outcome of bringing a conception of all things in relation to Vishnu, or into the emanating source of those things. If one can acknowledge, not just intellectually, but in a responsible manner of living, that everything has a proprietor. Because the conception that everything comes from God means He's the proprietor. If I think it doesn't belong to anybody, then there's the option that I can make it mine. Of course, if I'm a thief, I don't have to think about does it belong to somebody. My program is to make it mine. But if that being a thief mentality is something I just am not inclined to do, acknowledging that that just like in Isha Upanishad, the invocation of Isha Upanishad is that all emanations come from the complete whole. Om Purnama Dak Purnamidam Purnat Purnamo Dakshate. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate. Everything that exists comes from the Supreme, cause of all causes. Since everything comes from the Supreme, it belongs to Him. The Creator is the proprietor. In our capitalistic view of things, the person who makes something, he's the proprietor. We don't give credit to nature providing the trees or providing the hammers and nails and the steel. It's whoever puts it together belongs to that person. Or one who funds the thing, the capitalist, it belongs to that person. So maybe it belongs to the laborer, maybe it belongs to the investor, but neither the laborer nor the investor may wish to recognize where did all those gifts come from? Where did the abilities to assemble it come from? Where does the understanding how does the whole thing work to put it together come from? So a spiritual perspective is to go in regression back and back and back, and where does it all come from? It all comes from whatever that source is, that's the proprietor. And we enter into the scene, we come into this world owning nothing, we leave this world owning nothing. And then what our position is determined by how we relate to those things that we come in contact with. The spiritual conception is to recognize all things belong to God. The passionate conception is, let me make it mine. The ignorant conception is, I got frustrated because I didn't get the happiness I wanted when I got it. Or the thing I wanted I didn't get, so I'm frustrated. In the mind, the text 20 is, the mind is always agitated by the passionate mode. Let me make it mine. I want to own it. I want to control it. I want to enjoy it. And I want to rearrange those parts of it that don't suit me. Passionate mode. The mind is agitated by the passionate mode and frustration that follows passion. It didn't satisfy me. It's somebody else's fault. I'll fix them. Destruction. Anger. Frustration. Or forget it. I just go to sleep. Indolence, laziness, lethargy. What's the use? Just get intoxicated and drop out. I'm too frustrated. So the ignorance and passionate mode are agitating the mind always in the bewildered state of the living entity. So what to do? Shukadeva Goswami is instructing that problem can be rectified by seeing things in relation to their source. And there are different methods of seeing things in relation to their source. One approach is a philosophical approach. You try to discern as best as your intellect can assist you. And through the assistance of study of scripture and analysis and contemplation. Another method is you withdraw, even there's desires of related to passion and ignorance. Try to quiet the roar down a little bit by discipline of the senses and withdrawal of the mind. Could you do me a little favor? Could you just sit right there, because it would make eye contact with the people a lot easier. Thanks. So, what Shukadeva Goswami is introducing here, we emphasized this yesterday morning, a preliminary, it's not the ultimate, methodology that he's introducing is meditation upon the universal form. That is, the potencies of the Supreme as they're manifest in this world, and seeing the potencies of the Supreme in relation to the Supreme. Now, another method is to meditate directly upon the Supreme. And just so that we know where we're going with all of this, Maharaj Prakshit, after hearing this whole meditation on the potencies of the Supreme or the universal form in this world of the Supreme, who is of the spiritual world, he prefers just meditating upon Krishna, which leads into the second chapter, the Paramatma meditation, which leads into the devotional meditation, just like with Dhruva. He was meditating on the Paramatma, and with such intensity that the Supreme Lord manifested himself externally as a person, and they had their personal exchange. But this is prior to that. This is further down the elementary introductory stages, where a person is so much absorbed in sense objects and trying to enjoy sense objects of this temporary world due to the influence of passion, and feeling great frustration when that real satisfaction doesn't happen, because it doesn't touch the soul, because it's out there. It's not touching the soul. Frustrated. And that satisfaction isn't coming. So, to bring this influence of passion and ignorance down, meditation upon the two, the combination of the practice of Ashtanga Yoga, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Dhyana, Dharana, Samadhi, Pratyahara, this eightfold yoga system, side by side with placing the mind upon the Virat Rupa. So the yoga system itself is mechanical. That type of yoga system. It's a meditative yoga system. Drilling the respiratory system, seating the body in such a way that the organs of the body are stimulated in a natural way, the senses are brought under control, the mind is brought under control, the mind is withdrawn from the objects of the senses and reposed internally, and then contemplation upon the soul and the supreme soul within. The methodology is a mechanical one. So while that methodology, which Dhruva was also recommended to do, while that methodology is being practiced, where do you put the mind? So this recommendation is put the mind on those forms, that the features of the supreme of this world that are magnificent, splendorous, wonderful, awesome, breathtaking, so that the impersonal approach can be ever so gradually spiritualized. Prabhupada writes, the pure devotee of the Lord, that's Shukadeva, knows the art of converting everything into its spiritual existence by service attitude. So once I have this awesome sense of the Supreme, the honest person will then naturally feel, what can I do to serve Him? In the presence of a great personality, it's just natural. You want to do something for that great personality. Like the example I gave yesterday, governor of Illinois. If somebody that one considered great, even if you didn't even know who that person was, just being in the presence of someone who's truly a great person, it's a natural disposition of heart. You want to do something for that person. So, what to speak of the Supreme Person? So if that feeling can be stirred, the purpose of Virat Rupa is to stir that feeling. Here's how Prabhupada, now text 21, and how Prabhupada explains that. O King, by this system of remembrance, that's meditation upon the Virat Rupa, and by being fixed in the habit of seeing the all-good personal conception of the Lord, that is, not seeing things as objects that are up for grabs. Let me put it in my pocket and walk down the street because it was up for grabs. Nobody was claiming it. I made it mine. And my life's ambition is to make as many things mine as I can. Of course, it's all going to be taken from me, but, you know, it's just like collecting stamps or something. People that are collectors, they collect knickknacks. I've been in people's homes, it's just like this unlimited array of little knickknacks. Wow. What are you going to do with all that stuff? Collect some more of them. Anyway. To relieve that passionate push of owning and controlling, manipulating, enjoying the affairs of material energy. The habit of seeing the all-good personal conception of the Supreme means they're not objects that are up for grabs. It's the energy of the Supreme. It's the property of the Supreme. It's His. Let me respect that it's His, and let me respect Him. What splendor He manifests. Once Prabhupada was asked, is it okay, like, you know, new devotees, is it okay to enjoy a beautiful sunset or a beautiful rose, something wonderful in nature? And Prabhupada said, yes. And when you are enjoying, it's not the spirit of, you know, gratifying your senses, it's the spirit of appreciating how wonderful is Krishna. What a spectacular thing Krishna has created. And that spectacular thing is but a spark of His splendor. So how splendorous is Krishna if just this spark is being manifest by Him? How wonderful is Krishna? Like the cobbler who was appreciating the words of Narada, that he had gone to see Lord Narayan and he wanted to know, how many more lifetimes will I have before I return to the spiritual world? And Narayan said, tell the cobbler, this is his last lifetime. And if he asks you, what was Narayan doing? Tell him that he was putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. And when Narayan told the cobbler, when Narada told the cobbler, that's what Narayan was doing, he said, oh my Lord, it's so wonderful. And then Narada said, well, how can you accept that he was putting an elephant through a little opening at the eye of a needle? And his response was, well, he can do anything. He can put a whole banyan tree, hundreds and hundreds of banyan trees, inside a little seed. So he can put a whole banyan trees inside a little seed. Why he can't put an elephant through the eye of a needle? My Lord is so wonderful. So by even little things within nature, or by not man-made arrangements, but God-made arrangements, so much of technology is just studying what God made and try to reproduce it. The whole of nanotechnology is just focused on, you know, what goes on in a micro scale and how we can imitate it. You know, how do insects that don't have eyes like we have, how do they see? They study that. So they can make little micro, you know, spy things for war technology and go see what everybody is doing. That's what they're doing. And then once they figure the technology out, they make it available to some commercial something for some commercial purpose, and then they get their money back from all the money they've invested. And then thus the world goes round. But where is the appreciation? How wonderful is God who has made these amazing things? So that's the spirit here. When those two things happen, remembrance of this by contemplation on Virat Rupa and seeing things in relation to a personal creator and proprietor and enjoyer, then very soon a devotional attitude of service to the Lord awakens. That is, I want to serve Him. I want to always remain in His association. What are you doing? Always in the association of such a amazing person, you want to do something for them. Here's Prabhupada's purport. This is packed. Success of mystic performances is achieved only by the help of devotional attitude. And then he explains. So the Ashtanga yoga system achieves its real intended purpose or success only when the mood of devotion is mixed with that Ashtanga yoga. In other words, someone can follow that all the eight stages of following the ethical principles of conduct of life, yama, niyama, become really expert at asanas, yogic sitting postures, control the breathing, withdraw pratyahara, withdraw the mind and senses from the objects, and then turn the contemplation inward upon the Supreme, and in this final stage, see the Supreme within. Now, if there isn't a devotional mentality, Prabhupada explained, one can think, aha, that's me. I am God. Although there's certain logic missing, one is perceiving an object. How can I be the object that I'm perceiving? As they say, it's a no-brainer. There's the perceived, the perceiver, and the object, or the process of perceiving. So there's plurality on that spiritual plane. But if the devotional mood is present, then that devotional mood nurtures realization of the Supreme, and it nurtures a mood of a spirit of devotion. I'd like to, and in awe, what can I do to serve that Supreme? The awe and veneration mood is of service, is awakened. Now he explains how this pantheism connects or just stirs the mood of devotion. Pantheism, or the system of feeling the presence of the Almighty everywhere, meaning it's not just an intellectual thing. It may start with an intellectual thing, you know, like you practice. Like, you know, practice riding a bicycle, or practice driving a car, or practice typing on your keyboard, or practice how do you move a mouse and make things click. Practice. But after some, with the pantheism, it's although it may start in mechanical fashion, because it is a temporary form related to the Supreme Lord, one in course of time develops a sense of the presence of God is everywhere. And that feeling of being in the presence of God everywhere, it's a nice feeling. So persons want, and naturally so, want that feeling. And so that inspires or induces further absorption and meditation on this Virat Rupa. So such feeling of the presence of the Almighty everywhere is a sort of training of the mind to become accustomed to the devotional conception. And the devotional conception is, let me serve. In that tone, or with the feelings of love or inspiration. And it is this devotional attitude of the mystic, that one who's doing this Ashtanga yoga practice, that makes possible the successful termination of such mystic attempts. like, you know, the mystic process dissolves. By so the transit component is a devotional conception that starts with, instead of seeing things as being up for grabs in passion, how can I enjoy and exploit things in this world, facilities of nature and other people and whatever it is, power and control and all those intense feelings of passion that people have. This contemplation, controlling of the mind and senses, and contemplation upon the Virat Rupa gradually awakens a feeling of being in the presence of the Almighty at all times. Passion has subsided, ignorance has subsided, goodness has awakened. In that state of goodness, a sense of being in the presence of God. All that one has done so far is just appreciated the splendor of nature in a non-exploitative mentality, and more in a mode of goodness disposition. So that awakens, it's a training of the mind to awaken the devotional conception. I should serve. And when that devotional conception grows and matures and becomes stronger, then the mechanical system, that impersonal mechanical methodology, becomes, its importance fades. And what becomes important is opportunities for service. And so the function that Sukadeva Goswami is performing, or the function that a spiritual master performs, is from the liberated position to assist the one who is entangled to come to the liberated position. A simple example that Prabhupada gives is the person who is tied up with ropes, hands and legs, is unable to free another person who's tied up with ropes, hands and legs. But someone who's not tied up can free another person. And you may start with one knot at a time. But the experience of being released from being bound up with ropes, hands and legs, has this progressive stage of experience. And so there are methodologies that assist one in this progressive path. Now again, after hearing all of this, Maharaj Parikshit says, I'd rather just meditate directly upon Krishna. He's the one that's behind these opulences and these splendorous things. Let me just meditate. What is that form of his that I can just directly meditate upon rather than the splendor of things within this creation? And so meditation on the Lord in the heart, but then still the devotional conception needs to tandem, side by side, be aroused, and in the devotional conception, as happened with Dhruva, to see the form of the Lord and interact with him in a personal way. One is not, however, elevated to such a successful status of this kind of perfection, without the tinge of mixture in devotional service. The devotional atmosphere created by pantheism, pantheistic vision, develops into devotional service in later days, and that is the only benefit for the impersonalist. So the devotional atmosphere is once again this feeling of being in the presence of the Almighty. The Almighty is, Prabhupada is choosing that particular nomenclature purposefully. Almighty means the possessor of unlimited opulences. In the language of the Vedas, Parasya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate, Swabhaviki Gyana Bala Kriyacha, indicating that the Supreme has unlimited potencies. And all of them are spiritual. And even there's reflections of those spiritual potencies known as this material world. Behind these reflections, there's an object. And behind the object of those spiritual potencies, there's the possessor of those potencies. And behind the possessor of those potencies, there's this supreme personality of loving quality and loving exchange and sublime form. So a devotional atmosphere is the purpose of this Virat Rupa meditation, is to gradually awaken a sense of the Almighty, even in our present circumstance. So Shukadeva Goswami has just explained how passion and ignorance can subside, and how through this mechanical process and contemplation of Virat Rupa, the higher stages of devotion can awaken. Then Maharaj Prakshit asks a really wonderful question. And this you put on your mental health radar screen, because he asks an important question, and Shukadeva Goswami answers it. While transforming our conceptions from impersonal to personal, what about all the dirty things in the heart? These dirty things in the heart are things that just, they drive us to hurtful behaviors and attitudes and, you know, things that aren't good for us or good for others. What about those things? Can you in detail describe how this transformation process is to be applied, so that the therapeutic effect is that the dirty things of the heart are diminished and eliminated? Can you please explain that? And Prabhupada's purport is very, very wonderful. The dirty things of the heart of a conditioned soul are the root cause of all troubles for him. A conditioned soul is surrounded by the manifold miseries of material existence. But on account of his gross ignorance, he is unable to remove the troubles due to the dirty things in the heart. So there's the fundamental attitude problem. And with the attitude, I have an attitude towards Krishna problem, towards he who is the source of me and everything that exists. I've got an attitude. So then I from that attitude I have conceptions. And there's so many conceptions of what my mission in life is. My mission in life is to enjoy. And what does that mean? Well, then there's so many ideas of what it means to enjoy. Because the soul wants to enjoy, because constitutionally the soul is part of the supreme enjoyer. Enjoyment is our natural position, but what does it mean to enjoy? When you've turned your attention away from the light, all you have is darkness. And there are different shades of darkness. But it's darkness. It's the absence of light. So if one can, so in that darkness, then I have so many ideas of enjoyment apart from the Supreme that are in the shape of different desires. And those different desires are causing me lots of problems. It's not bringing me happiness, that's one problem. But it's causing problems that then I'm very, very busy trying to solve. But if the fundamental thing of turning attention towards God is not, if there's no spiritual connection, then I'm just busy managing problems. And mismanaging problems creates more problems that I have to then also manage, that there leads to more mismanagement. Because the root cause I didn't capture. He actually is meant to serve the will of the Supreme, but on account of the dirty things in the heart, he likes to serve concocted desires. There's the problem. Can we fix that problem? Well, it's I just have to adjust my desires. I have to do it better. I have to take this path and put these things together with those things, and then and it doesn't happen, so then I can become frustrated. And frustrated, and I've just created some more problems. It's very complex. The network of material life is unlimitedly complex. And when people find the complexity overwhelming, they become very depressed and suicidal and hurtful to others, bashing others and crashing others and destroying others and just out of fits of anger and frustration. It goes on. Having no solution. And being driven by passion. I want happiness. I want relief from this condition. It's their problem. It's their fault. And so on. Whew. The desires, these desires, instead of giving him peace of mind, create new problems and thus bind him to the cycle of repeated birth and death. The dirty things of fruitive work and empiric philosophy can be removed only by association with the Supreme Pure. There's the solution. Impurity in contact with the Supreme Pure becomes pure. Prabhupada's simple example, what happens when the sun is exposed to a puddle of urine? Does the sun become contaminated or does the puddle of urine become purified? The impure becomes pure in contact with the Supreme Pure, and the Supreme Pure doesn't become at all adulterated. So if we can bring our consciousness to the Supreme Pure, whatever that is, however it's to be done, therein lies the solution to the root cause of the problem. We discussed this yesterday morning also. Just like, sorry for being a trungity in your profession, but allopathic medicine doesn't address the root problem. It covers the problem. You got a headache? Here, take this medicine. You got pain over there? Take this medicine. You can't, it's you relieve the symptom without the root problem. And you know, go further back and further back. It's this, having this body is a problem. What can I do about that problem? Well, you get this body because you have desires. Okay, how do I deal with desires? So you just keep going back and going, what's the root source of all of this? Our acharyas say, Jiva Goswami says, the root cause of the problem of material existence is we turned our attention away from God in a spirit of I want to enjoy, because that constitutionally we're entitled to enjoyment in relation to the Supreme, in a loving relation with the Supreme. We're entitled. It's our nature. And we want to experience our nature. But due to turning out of enmity, turning our attention away from God, we're trying to find that happiness, enjoyment, fulfillment of a loving propensity with objects of this world. And it's not fulfilling. We never feel fulfilled. Frustrated. Then create another combination of things. It gets in the complexity and complexity and complexity. Create more and more problems. The Lord, being omnipotent, can offer His association by His inconceivable potencies. Of course, this is the Virat Rupa. Then He can... He can make His association available in a personal way. So in the process that's primarily respected and promoted in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the holy name. Through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, one can associate with Nija Sarva Shaktis, all of the unlimited potencies of God. How potent is God? Not just some of His potencies, a sunset potency, or the fragrance of a rose potency, or the changing of the sea. The fall season is spectacular, and the spring season is spectacular. Winter season is not so nice. When the snowflakes come down, it looks nice. Anyway. Krishna says, of seasons, I am the flower-bearing spring, where the bees start buzzing and the birds are chirping. And it's nice. It's a very beautiful season. But this is just a speck. What to speak of the spiritual potencies? Let's say the potency of the sun. That's a material potency. And those material potencies are just a fragment of the spiritual potencies, and all spiritual potencies of the Supreme Lord are packed within His names. Each one of His names has all of His spiritual potencies. How thick is our consciousness to not be able to perceive that? But the potencies are there, and purified souls are realizing them and sharing their experience of chanting the names of God, and from within the names of God, the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord all become revealed, just as with Dhruva and with so many. He was then able to disclose this form that I'm seeing. It's nothing like any material form. It's Sat-Chit Ananda Vigrahas, full of eternality, knowledge, and bliss. These bodies are not eternal. They're not inherently full of knowledge. And they're not inherently blissful. We're seeking happiness through the senses contacting sense objects. Ooh. Got a bumblebee inside. You can turn it off, huh? Okay. Thus, persons who are unable to pin their faith on the personal feature of the Absolute Truth are given a chance to associate with His Virat Rupa, or cosmic, impersonal feature of the Lord. The cosmic, impersonal feature of the Lord is a feature of His unlimited potencies. Since the potent and potencies are identical, even the conception of His impersonal cosmic feature helps the conditioned soul to associate with the Lord indirectly, and thus gradually rise to the stage of personal contact. Just because we were discussing this yesterday, it's fresh in my mind. The mental health profession, without spiritual contact, is not going to be effective. It'll be cosmetic at best. You know, someone can feel better for a little while, but the root thing is still going to disturb. And chances are the manifestation will come out in a very similar form, or if not in that same form, some other form, but the root disturbance is still there. So methods of spiritual contact may be diverse, and there are principles. So if one applies those principles and is making some progress on the path, therefore the response, what if people have different paths, follow the path. And that it's not that necessarily all roads lead to Rome, or all paths lead to the same stage of realization, but all paths, if one continues, will eventually, because there is but one Supreme, and there are different appreciations of that Supreme, different paths to reach some gradual spiritualization of consciousness, or, you know, at least through codes of ethics to become more in goodness and less in passionate ignorance. There at least some relief. That's not as yet a solution. But some teaching, religious teaching, is be good and don't be bad. Be ethical and, you know, try to be a good person and don't hurt anybody. Don't live your life in such a way you're allowing yourself to purposefully cause pain to other living beings. Be good. That's ethics. But religion is far more than ethics. At least spirituality is far more than ethics. Spirituality is connecting with the source and then responsibly acting in relation to the source. That is, all things are his property because he's the source. Now, how do I live my life acknowledging all things are the property of God? While I'm passing through his kingdom, his creation. Certainly ethically should be there, but this principle that's being introduced here is bringing, well, not acting in passion, but acting in goodness, in knowledge, acknowledging the Supreme. Fix your mind upon those features of this Virat Rupas, those features of the Supreme, that are majestic and awesome and splendorous, and appreciate the person behind indirectly. And in appreciating the person behind, stir the devotional mood. And then direct activities of devotion can be provided for such a person. Just cover one more verse. Sukadeva Goswami answers the question of the king. One should control the sitting posture, jita asana, regulate the breathing process, pranayama, and thus control the mind and senses, and with the intelligence, apply the mind to the gross potencies of the Lord, called the Virat Rupa. So the intelligence, dhyā, is the Sanskrit word here. To fix the mind, there has to be something stronger, because the mind is going to run all over the place otherwise. Chanchala himana Krishna, the mind is very flickering. So intelligence needs to be strong. And not, there's a difference between material intelligence and spiritual intelligence. Here's the simple distinction. Material intelligence function is to discern how to satisfy the dictates of the mind. The mind says, my dear intelligence, can you please come here? Yes, sir, what is it? I have a desire. Oh, you have a desire. Yes, a very strong desire. I would like da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, I may have to go to school for some years to get da-da-da-da-da, but I'll gladly help you. I'm sure you'll remunerate me very nicely. Yes, yes, I will. But I'm very much dependent upon you, good intelligence, for making this arrangement. I will do it. I'm your servant. So the intelligence serves, material intelligence serves the dictates of the mind, how to organize matter in such a way that the desire of the mind is fulfilled. And the desire of the mind is hearing from the senses, I want this object, or I don't like that object. Okay, I'll figure it out. Oh, I'm working on it. The intelligence serves the mind when it's, things are backwards, and actually the one dictating to the mind are the senses. So the senses up here, the mind, and the intelligence is the order carrier, the dictates of the mind, how to do it. And when spiritual priorities are the other way around, the intelligence is giving direction to the mind. My dear mind, don't go over there. Go over here. And when you go over here, in the following mood, you should fix yourself upon these things. And the other things, they're going to cause you lots of trouble and contamination. Don't go there. So intelligence in spiritual life needs to be strong. And what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita is by studying the sacred conversation of Bhagavad Gita, one is strengthening one's intelligence. You're bathing, as what Ralph Waldo Emerson said, one is bathing one's intellect by studying the sacred words of Bhagavad Gita. Then when the intelligence is a little bathed and a little sacred, a little strong, the intelligence can give direction to the mind. So hearing regularly from the scripture is a very important part. It's not just having more information. It's having more purification. And becoming in that purified state of a spiritual disposition. That is, how to reach the supreme goal of life. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. Krishna is the giver of spiritual intelligence for those that have a certain qualification. And that certain qualification is tesham satata yuktanam vajitam priti purvatam. Their disposition of devotion is awakened, then Krishna gives the intelligence. Oh, you want to come to me? Here's how you can come to me. And then the intelligence is to give direction to the mind. My dear mind, please cooperate. Come to this wonderful form of the Supreme Lord. Contemplate this wonderful qualities of the Supreme Lord. Hear with great attention the sounds of His holy name. And in conclusion, Prabhupada writes, well, there's many things. As soon as the potencies are understood, potencies of Krishna, this material creation, His potencies, are understood to be instrumental manifestations of the transcendence, one automatically advances to the next step. The next step is feelings of awe and respect for the Supreme, which is then followed by let me do something for Him, the devotional mood, the mood of service. And gradually the stage of full realization becomes possible for Him. So this chapter is entitled The First Step in God Realization, and that's spiritualizing and personalizing our conceptions of what we see around us, creating a conducive atmosphere for spiritual progress. Srimad Bhagavatam is nice, huh? Very nice. Okay, any discussion? Yeah.
You were talking about material intelligence and spiritual intelligence.
Yeah.
Are these two different entities, or is it the material intelligence that gets spiritualized by spirituality?
Well, it's two different entities because one is of matter and the other is of spirit, and there's two different entities. But their differentiation is according to function. So, yes, one can spiritualize intelligence, one can spiritualize the mind, one can spiritualize the senses. And the spiritualized mind, intelligence, and senses act spiritually. But there is a difference at the same time. That is, when at a certain point we're going to leave behind this body and mind and material intelligence. According to Lord Kapila, it's by the process of bhakti alone that the material mind is dissolved. So it's a different entity. The material mind and material intelligence, they're coverings of the soul. They're elements of the 24 elements in Sankhya philosophy. Mind and intelligence and senses. They're components of material creation. They go from a manifest state to an unmanifest state, or an unmanifest state to a manifest state. In the spiritual world, we don't find, or in the spiritual position, we don't find material intelligence, material mind. Thank God. So yes, there is an understanding of a spiritualized, what Prabhupada explains it, it's like a gold box and a gold plated box. A gold plated box looks like a gold box, and there is a difference between the gold plated box and the gold box. Or the distinction between a copper wire and an electrified copper wire. One is the carrier of electricity and the other is not. So, electrified, spiritualized. It's spiritualized by the presence of spirit. Otherwise, it's just dull matter. But acts like spirit because of the presence of spirit. So what's behind is consciousness. And where our consciousness is directed, fundamentally, towards the Supreme or away from the Supreme. That's material intelligence, away from the Supreme. Spiritual intelligence toward the Supreme. So in this present lifetime, we direct our attention to the Supreme, our intelligence becomes spiritualized. It doesn't mean that we can no longer discriminate between the door and the wall. Between our hat and our shoes. Material intelligence discriminates between things. Hats go on heads and shoes go on feet. So our intelligence is still operating. But it's for the purpose of service of Krishna. Spiritualized intelligence. Yes.
When Rama Rasa saw Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, he didn't. I thought he didn't get the enough purification to serve him right away. So is it because he didn't practice devotional service and following the Ashtanga yoga system?
No. He was chanting the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. He was on the platform of pure devotional service. The reason he didn't have an opportunity to go with Lord Vishnu when Lord Vishnu returned to Svetadvipa is because he had this previous desire. And so to purposely fulfill that previous desire, he had the facility for that. And one can serve the personality of Godhead in pure devotion in any realm. The criterion is consciousness, not location or circumstance. It's by internal, not by external considerations. So Dhruva was engaged in pure devotional service. Lord Vishnu had as a plan for him to serve for 36,000 years in Satya Yuga as the king. Now, 36,000 years means in previous ages people had longer duration of life by multiples of 10. Anyway, so different yugas, each of the four yugas. So it wasn't like it was for our present age, it's like 36 years of being. So, but so Dhruva's lamentation in one sense was I was unable to accompany him. But the real meditation or deeper lamentation was I came with these foolish material objectives. I didn't come to serve him. I came with my wish list. How? What consciousness was I in? How unfortunate. That was his concern. No? Yeah.
We talked about the Ashtanga Yoga system, and it's a mechanical process unless it has devotion in it.
Okay. It's still a mechanical process. It's just with devotion in it, then it leads to something beyond mechanical result.
I got the understanding from the class that by performing these mechanical processes, one can get to a point where a little devotion comes into the heart.
No, it's combining that process with the proper form of meditation. You leave out that last little phrase, with the proper form of meditation, and the result will not be devotional service. It can be up to thinking, I am God. And that's the absence of devotion. That's what people are doing right now. I'm the Lord of all I survey. And some people don't understand that, so I'm taking care of that problem. So that's the absence of devotion.
So the process of meditation sort of, I read someplace that bhakti brings about bhakti.
Yeah.
So the form of meditation brings about that bhakti within.
Yes, yes. And that Shukadeva Goswami is the carrier of bhakti, or he's the bhakta. He's passing that bhakti onto the recipient, in this case Maharaj Parikshit or whoever comes in contact. But one may put that on the pause button for a moment, come over here. Someone else may simply teach the Ashtanga Yoga system without any reference to meditation upon a personal feature of the Supreme, and it's a different outcome altogether. It's not that they'll converge in, you know, infinity somewhere. But yes, bhakti creates bhakti. Okay. Yes.
How to become a real stamp collector instead of obsessive and compulsive stamp collector? What I mean is that because most of you live in the Indian culture, and it is very natural that you believe in Krishna.
Yeah.
And for me and my wife, because we live in a different culture, sometimes, I mean, make a very improper analogy, because it, like a boys and girl, you meet, maybe the first girl you met, maybe not the girl you would marry.
Okay.
So my question is that whether you pick up a philosophy or a belief, or you explore and then try to find the, not a passion, but the one which.
Yeah, I appreciate very much what you're asking. Just to amplify or say the same thing in another language, our spiritual master has taught that religion is not simply a belief system. That's the stamp collector. And because I was born into a family where this was the belief system, that's who I am. I'm a Buddhist, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, because that's my belief system. Now, I may fall in love with someone who's from another belief system, so we got to work this out, so I'll just take on their belief system, or they'll take on mine, and it becomes nice. And it's just changing your belief system. And that's not an essence. It's an external. So, what's recommended is to understand what's behind the belief system. The belief system is of ideas and rituals, concepts, intellectual stuff, and rituals, things that you do with your senses. What's behind all that? So, what Lord Chaitanya taught is that which awakens love for God, that's what real religion is. The essence of stamp collectorism. Not the external part. So, you know, you don't carry that with you. The externals don't go with the soul. Essences go with the soul. So, like you, I didn't grow up in a culture where Krishna devotion was my life, in one sense. I did grow up in a culture where, as a child, I accepted that God is a person. But, so, and from what I understand from from the upbringing that most likely most people in China grow up with is that is not part of the conceptions that you grow up with. It's not, there is no God. It's just, there's no conception like that that's stirring. But just yesterday afternoon, Jamie, the younger American fellow that was in our company, and his wife had a discussion with them, and she was looking to her husband saying, you know, he's very fortunate, he grew up in a Catholic family, but I didn't grow up in a family where concept of God was what we grew up with. I mean, I knew that it was out there, but it wasn't something that we grew up with in my family. So it's taking a little bit of time to digest all of this. I'm not getting indigestion, but it's taking some time. So, and there are many. One of the things that I appreciate about Krishna consciousness is illustrated right in China, that people don't have a conception of Krishna, don't even have a conception of God, but because it's something that's within, you know, say, if the theology is correct, the theology says Krishna is within and love for Krishna is within. It just needs to be awakened. It's not something to import from outside and bring it in. And then you go, yes, I believe it. It's already there. And just needs to be like a match. There's fire inside the match. Just have to strike it the proper way. So there are many, 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 I shouldn't say how many, but many Krishna devotees in China today that didn't have it in China, not just in America. That's not part of their culture, but it's part of what's inside. Not just that God is a person, but he has a form and he has a name and he has qualities and he has activities eternally. And I have an eternal relationship with that person. So that's, this isn't my upbringing in the material sense, but in the spiritual sense, it's perfectly natural. Maybe one of the things that you appreciated from seeing the crowd at the temple last night, while there's largely of Indian origin, there are people that are, you know, the whole spectrum of color and culture, and people from Russia, and people from Africa, and people from this place and that place, and this religious background, that religious background. It's just amazing. Why? Because there's something that's on the soul platform that's not based upon a belief system that you heard or grew up with. It's based upon something that's already within. It's not something outside. Something that the message resonates inside. And so, any ISKCON temple that you go to in the world, you'll see something close to what you saw last night. I mean, not necessarily the same bodies or the same ethnic backgrounds, but you know, the same practices and the same teachings in Siberia, in West Africa, in Alaska, you know, anywhere you go. China, America, not just India. that somebody was asking me, you know, is your constituency largely Indian? I said, well, it depends on where you are. In Europe, almost none. In Russia, Eastern Europe, almost none. UK, lots. Toronto, lots, because the connection between the British Empire and here in America, so many people from India have immigrated to America. But in Africa, it's Africans. In Australia, it's Australians. The Indian families that go there, they appreciate it and they go, but it's not an ethnic-based thing. And how is it that persons that it's not ethnic based for them, how have they connected with it? It's on a very important platform. See it the other way around. Some persons that have ethnically connected with it may have only connected with it externally. Mm-hmm. And behind you there are some persons who are nodding. It's easier on the external platform to come, you know, to do this worship and to hear these, but then that's not going to stick because there's lots of options out there. So this is attractive for persons who want essences. And as I was sharing with you last night, without being judgmental, there are different approaches. And those different approaches, in essence, are like this. The form may be something. So many varieties of form, but the essences are like this. And they'll take you to this stage. And then if you like, you can stay there. If you like, you can... So it's not a belief system. It's an awakening of love of God. And there's full encouragement. You like to awaken love of God this way. Here it is. Like to awaken love of God that way. Here it is. But if you want it to be really effective, don't just take the form. Come to the essence. So that's the message. And then, you know, each person, just like when Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, at the very, very end, the last thing he says is, now I've explained everything you consider, do what you feel you must do. Now there's the free will, individual choice component. So, the message is, these are essences and take shelter of and absorb yourself in the essences. This is a particular form, and it's very sublime, it's very wonderful. And there are other forms that are also sublime and wonderful. But be sure you capture the essence. And then, after having, you know, which is what's going to happen anyways, you consider very carefully, you do what you feel you must do. But the criterion is not familiarity, and you wouldn't be here if it was familiarity is something that we're looking for. But you want something that's genuine. And so do each one of us. And so it's not to rule out that someone can't experience something genuine any other way. We don't have a franchise on relationships with God. But this is very sublime and very effective and very personal. Ananda Vrindavan.
As you talked about having a spiritual conception towards everything, seeing Krishna as the creator and the owner and the enjoyer, so it's such a big and deep principle and need such a big shift. So I was wondering, where do we begin so that we can actually experience that and move
forward? Well, what the Bhagavad Dharma process recommends is hearing. And, you know, with qualifiers. Very attentive hearing. And respectful hearing. And it doesn't require believing. It requires respectful hearing. It's like, you know, preliminary faith. Adau Shraddha. Tata Sadhu Sangha. And what do you do with Sadhu Sangha? You do the things that sadhus do together. Bhajana Kriya. That's hearing and chanting. And that's the spiritual touch that touches the soul and awakens the soul, enlivens the soul. And when the soul awakens and enlivens, the spiritual conception emerges. And while the spiritual conception is like a little plant that's, you know, shooting out of the soil, some little pieces of soil tumble over because it displaced that. So we are then brought into a position of examining our material conceptions. We hold those material conceptions up to the light and go, ooh, this is a material conception. But we don't recognize it as a material conception unless we have a backdrop of light, a spiritual conception to look at it through or in comparison to. And then we can make our choices of spiritualizing those conceptions. Like, let's say, family. It's nothing but matter and matter. Husband and wife. So, it's a material arrangement. But let me spiritualize that arrangement. So let me take from a material conception and bring in spirit and have a spiritual conception. This is an opportunity for one soul very confidentially and intimately to serve another soul and assist one another to reach the Supreme Soul. That's the arrangement. And while so doing, we can assist other souls in the form of children to reach that same destination. That's a major spiritual conception, spiritualizing of a conception of what otherwise is thought of as in a material way. Enjoyment of the act of procreation and enjoyment of the being with the child and da 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 da. And then the tribulations that come. But, you know, you just go to take the bad with the good and you take the tribulations. Anyway, so there's material conceptions and you can spiritualize those conceptions. But how to spiritualize the primary moving force or method is hearing and chanting method. And then there's things that flow from that. You know, how do I, here's this material conception of things, how do I address it? So then we bring different resources to bear. The reason for bringing those resources to bear is, to the degree that they help to spiritualize the conception, they help us see God, instead of seeing the absence of God. In the absence of God, it's darkness. And it's fearful and it's foolish and attached and all those yucky things. So whatever resource, it's the very simple criterion, one stroke, that which helps awaken my love for God. I accept it. And they're God-given things that help awaken love for God. Primarily, I accept those things, and other things are accepted following those things. you know, following the healthcare profession. It's because they're your guests, so focusing here. But it's so I want my life to be of some value to others, and I see so much mental pain in this world. Let me do something to help. I'm just a small person, and the world is so big, and there's so much pain. What can I do? But let me do something. But then I can't do that something effectively without a spiritual center. And how can I do that? How can I give a spiritual center to others if I don't have a spiritual center myself? So, and, you know, it's spiritualizing that wish of trying to help, be of bring value into the lives of other people. So that a conscientious person is going to consider, I want the real thing. I want the best medicine, please, for this disease called material life. So you can then spiritualize. Otherwise, a godless conception. Who are we to, you know, bring cures to other people? If we're God, we can. But if we're thinking we're God, we're fools. If we're thinking we're instruments of God, then there's some hope. So then you spiritualize one by one. You just, in principle, that which awakens love for God. You accept those things. That's the spiritualizing of concepts. One doesn't even think about that unless there's, it's there. And then there's something that enhances that in a stronger and purer and more mature fashion, more mature way of exhibiting that seed of desire. Nurture the little creeper, and it just keeps growing and growing. And conceptions spiritualize by the contact, just like what Dhruva said. By mercy of Narada and by your mercy, my dull stone-like state of consciousness has become totally enlivened. That's descending mercy. So one becomes eager for that. That's how conceptions become spiritualized. We can't do it on our own. One who thinks they can is a fool. It won't happen. They may delude themselves into something, but it's not going to happen. Okay? Yes?
Yesterday morning class, we talked about desire being contaminated with the soul.
Yes.
But today we talked about sense objects through the senses, making the desires felt in the mind.
Where That's right.
So how does the desires, I can't even
phrase the question.
Phrase the question forward, but my question is, there is a mind, there is a soul, and there is a desire. In any way these three are connected?
Yes. Desires are carried in the mind. Like air carries aroma, desires are carried in the mind. Let's go to what we're more familiar with. The air, well, I'll just give a New York City example. There's the ocean air, and the ocean has a nice, fresh ocean breeze. And in New York City, there's a big garbage dump in Staten Island. This big mound of stinky stuff. And the ocean air passes over this mountain of garbage, and downwind, it stinks. The air doesn't stink. It's the aroma within the air that stinks. Air is odorless, colorless, tasteless. That's the quality of air. Downwind, it's carrying aroma. And then that same air passes over the Brooklyn Botanical Garden. And it smells nice. Air is odorless, The mind, similarly, is not, it's the repository of desire. And desire itself is of the soul. But when the soul turns attention away from God, then we get a mind, material mind, that covers the soul. And then, depending upon the contact, just like the ocean, garbage, botanical garden, depending upon what our mind associates with, we develop desires. If I associate with intellectuals at the university, then I can develop a desire to have such capacity. If I go and associate all day long with drunkards in a bar, chances are I'll develop desires like that. So the association that we keep has a great impact upon our desires. The resting place of desires in the soul, because constitutionally we're part of the Supreme, and we have this desire, natural desire, to be in a loving relationship with the Supreme. But if I turn my attention away from that healthy and natural state, desire still remains, but it depends upon the material contact. The agent for carrying those ever-changing desires is the mind. So if we
and that explains that when you take a V-birth, your desires get carried because
sure, because the mind carries the soul. The mind is the vessel. And the mind, along with the soul, goes to the next body. The subtle body, mind, intelligence, and false ego accompanies the soul, or carries the soul. But within the mind, that's where this little compartment is, where our desires are. So what our contemplations are, shape our desires. And then there's the senses. The senses are out there going, I want. The signal goes to the mind. The mind says, intelligence, can you please come here? Can you make this arrangement? Yes, sir. Right away, sir. There may be a little delay, but I'll work on it diligently. There's certainly an interrelation between these different things, entities. Yes.
Maharaj, you were explaining how the sun is purifying even when a dirty place is exposed to the sun.
Yeah.
And sun doesn't become contaminated.
Right.
The dirt is.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to do some services to Krishna or to a spiritual master, we want to do it very nicely. It has to be pure. But then while trying to do that sermon, all the dirty things come out, attachment, anger.
Yeah.
And I feel it's so mortifying that I'm ruining the service, I'm affecting others around me. So how to deal with it?
What does your husband tell you? Huh?
It looks to me like I'm affecting him also.
Yeah, but he must respond when you say those things to him. He must say, my dear wife, Jai Radhe, how many times have I told you? That Guru and Krishna know what your imperfections are, just as you know and I know. And they're encouraging you to come to the light And the medium of coming to the light is the devotional service. So, although when you do those services, those impurities may rise, that's okay. It's good. Then just don't identify with those impurities. You identify with that which is spiritual. Let them go. Be attentive to that which is going to continue to bring your attention to that which will purify you, which is the service. Or, even more specifically, the mood of devotion and love with which you render that service. Not just the service per se. Because everyone's doing something. So it's the love and devotion with which you're offering. Or, here's Prabhupada's words. When installing Rukmini Dwarkadish in Los Angeles, you know those memorable words that Prabhupada said, when approaching Krishna in his deity form, one should think in a humble state of mind, my dear Lord, I'm so unqualified, I'm rotten, fallen, puffed up. He began to cry. He became choked up with emotion, saying, but you're my everything. Please accept this service. Not, let me run away and hide because I have these disqualifications and impurities. Continue going to the light. Krishna already knows. Better than you know. Better than your husband knows, Krishna knows. It's okay. Krishna is such a person, although he knows, he wants your love and devotion. And that's your healthy state. And that when you act in the healthy state, the impurities will subside. The impurities are from neglecting that natural flow of love and devotion and turning away. So accept that Guru and Krishna are knowing and loving persons, and accept your service. Very happily. Because, not because they need some service, but they want you to be, again, happy and healthy and wholesome and joyful. And that's the process. Extending expressions of loving service. But keep going. Don't get distracted or don't identify with the impurity. Identify on the spiritual plane, with beyond the covering, there's the eternal soul. Part of the Supreme, and the Supreme is forever inviting. Please, come. And you just have to say, yes, here I come. Although I'm coming in this yucky condition, you're so merciful. You're accepting this offering. So kind. Thank you. Okay, so something?
No.
No, wait. Go ahead.
I have two questions.
Okay.
One is, why people want to leave? What's the meaning of
okay. Simple question, huh?
Another one is, how should they deal with that, with open mind?
How should you pursue that with an open mind? That was the question?
Deal with death?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Minor questions. Let me just respond by saying, as a preview, I mentioned yesterday that I had, last week Friday, attended a, I don't know what they called it, a gathering at Harvard Divinity School where that film was being previewed, and the film was Oneness Within Diversity and Within Chaos. Where's that? How to find oneness. So the theme was, or the sequence was, that three independent filmmakers decided they had this calling from God to do this, just explore in this world of today how to experience that experience of oneness. So they came up with 21 questions, and they interviewed many people. They didn't interview Dalai Lama, but they interviewed one of his representatives, and Deepak Chopra, and some yogi, and someone from the Jewish faith, and a born-again Christian, and Thurman, who is, I forget his first name, but he's an advisor to Dalai Lama, and some Islamic priest, and a Tibetan monk, and, you know, and then just people. That's generic people. They interviewed a Hare Krishna sannyasi, Bhakti Tirtha Swami. You know, they didn't put the microphone, but they were with the camera, and they're asking the questions. So you didn't hear the question, but you just heard their answer. And what, just to give you an idea of the flavor, one of the questions was nonverbal. What is your response? How would you depict the condition of the world today? And some people went, you know, different things. One, anyway. So then you hear the narrator's voice saying, but one question seemed to be the most difficult question that we asked. And that was, just say, can you please describe what is the meaning of life? And then, you know, person after person, the meaning of life. Then another person, the meaning of life. Meaning of life. They would just say back the question. Blank. And as I was watching the film, I was thinking, most amazing that so many people, how can they live their life without any sense of meaning? And then that was the people, and then even the scholars and the religionists, and some of their answers, I would say in short, were ranging between unsatisfying and funny. But our scriptures our scriptures give a very succinct explanation, and I've already indicated it just today, but reawakening the purpose of human life, or the mission of human life, is to re-enter into our eternal loving relationship with God. The human form of life, according to the scriptures, is awarded by material nature as a special opportunity to do that, to realize the fullness of our loving relationship with God. You can say that in different ways. You can say to reach the maximum capacity that the soul has for full consciousness. So that's an impersonal statement. What is that full consciousness? Whatever it is, that's the meaning of life, to achieve that. But that full consciousness is in conjunction with the he who is never covered by anything. He was the source and cause of everything. And so that's knowledge. So there's eternality knowledge and the joy, the bliss of a loving relationship. Everyone desires to love and to be loved without exception in all species of life. The human mission is to achieve the full capacity of that, and that's reposed in one's loving relationship with God. And when that loving relationship with God is there, naturally flows love for all of the parts and parcels of God, which is every living being. Universal love flows from love of God. That's what our scriptures teach, and the Christian teaching is, it perfectly resonates. When Christ was asked on the Sermon of the Mount by his disciples, "You've taught us so many things. What is the essence of what you've come to teach?" He gave two things, and one follows from the other: to love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. It's the same message. The purpose is to come to that consciousness, love of God. And with love of God is love of all creatures, of God. And what, by what standard? As much as you care for yourself. That much. Love thy neighbor as thyself. So the meaning of life is to come to that consciousness. And whatever promotes that, whatever facilitates and nourishes that, that should be embraced. So then the natural next question that follows from that is, how do you do that? But, you know, that's... You didn't ask that question. How to rephrase how to address death with an open mind? Fortunately, this whole Srimad Bhagavatam addresses that. I mean, the storyline is a king who's going to die, and he addresses this great personality, the great personality that all great personalities accept as the greatest personalities. How to do that? And how to do that is by awakening this purpose of life, that's awakening our love of God, in a mature stage, then with the open mind, the death is but the soul passing from this body to another situation. So with the open mind, it's, in Bhagavad Gita language, it's like a person that changes their garment. And they discard the garment and put on another garment. So that's if reincarnation is taking place, or transmigration of the soul is taking place. The soul has just moved from this garment to that garment, this covering to that covering. Or, in a very fortunate circumstance, when the consciousness of the soul becomes fixed upon God, then one goes to that position where there's no more coverings or no more material bodies, but rather in the eternal kingdom of God. One resides with God. So the open mind starts with making a distinction, as Bhagavad Gita does, the difference between matter and spirit. If we identify the self to be the covering, the body, then it's devastation. Death is, it's all over. What Krishna says to Arjuna is, it's very interesting. He gives many different arguments. One of them is, if you think that there's no difference between the self and the body, then there's no cause for lamentation at the dissolution of the body, because all it is a combination of matter in this arrangement, and then it becomes that arrangement. There's no cause for lamentation. So the open mind is to be situated in knowledge. What's really going on is the soul is separating from matter, and depending upon the consciousness that the soul has, that consciousness will carry the soul to the next situation. The soul is not destroyed. Now, that's when you're situated in knowledge, and then there's all the emotions connected to my intelligence says something, my attachments say pain. So pain is pain of facing death, the death of ourselves or the death of others is due to attachment to a misconception. Someone just after the class last night, somebody was asking this question. My friend was saying, you know, attachments are natural. How can you avoid attachments? Even we gave the example, even we come here to this place of work and you see the same people every day, and one day you don't see one person, you ask, well, where's Charlie? Oh, he died yesterday. You know, you become attached to even those kinds of things. So what to speak of intimately connected to this body, as in one's parents and siblings and friends and husband and wife and children, and but it's on the platform of the temporary. So while passing through this field of the temporary, one should be guided by spiritual knowledge. The spiritual knowledge doesn't say, I don't care. The detachment is not an I don't care mentality. It's the spiritual conception is, here's another soul that I have an opportunity to associate intimately with to further our journey on the path to reaching love of God once again. So that person is very dear to me for that reason. Just like in my case, the person who is my spiritual master is no longer physically present. 1977, I was with him for about 11 years, and then he left his body. So I don't have his physical association anymore. But vibrational association is abundant. So, with an open mind, because that was the frame of your question, Prabhupada prepared us, just as the Bhagavatam is preparing us. There's two kinds of association. One is through physical presence, and the other is vibrational presence. The Sanskrit words are vapu and vani. Of the two, vibrational presence is more important. He explained. I'm now sharing it. One morning walk, we went with Prabhupada, and he was explaining this. He stopped, put his cane down, and said, explaining this point. Even when you have physical association, vani is more important. You can do something for your husband and your friends and family members, but And that's it's meaningful to do that. You want to do that. But more important, even in that situation, is the vibrational presence, the energy, the quality of your husband and the persons with whom you associate and your friends. More important. And when physical proximity is gone, vani, or vibrational presence, is also accessible. So when physical opportunity for physical presence is there, you take advantage of it. And when it's not there, vani, you take advantage of. So now we'll go to Krishna. Let's go to Krishna. In the case of Krishna, his message, he spoke Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, and then sometime after, his manifest presence in this world was withdrawn. So he left means to approach him through that message. And you approach through that message and you'll find him. So that's how to look at death with an open mind, with the lens of a spiritual conception. And with that, as we're hearing, with that spiritual conception, it removes the hankerings and lamentings, the material woes and sadness and anger and frustration and greed and all those undesirable things of the heart. The spiritual presence removes those things. It lifts from the heart those things. Then you can see death for what it is. It's the soul is transiting. And the soul has gone to another situation. I'll just share a personal experience, if I may, just... I had the experience of one devotee who was such a nice devotee who completed his Vishvambar. He completed his PhD study at a prestigious university in India. He had not yet married. He had gone to a teaching position where he was going to be training other students. His worldly life had, the preparation for his worldly life had just been over. And while visiting him, he had gone on an errand in the middle of the night, fell in a blind well, and died instantly. And he didn't come, we didn't know where he had gone, and the police found him. And it was just such a horrific... So here I am speaking these elevated, nice ideas. And just like that, this very, very dear person just gone. And if, thinking about the situation, if you go one direction, it's pain. It's horrible. It's just... disaster. Going the other direction is that the night before this happened, he shared two things with me. One was, I really wish that my father would capture the message of devotion, because he's doing things, but the mechanical exercise is there, but it hasn't somehow reached his heart. And then the other thing was, and I can't remember the exact way that he phrased it, but he would like to be able to, I can't remember the words that he used, but there were some limitations that he had, and he felt that he was unable to overcome those limitations, and it was frustrating him, his own personal limitations. So Krishna carried him to another situation. So in one sense, he's in Krishna fulfilled his desire, and I'm sure if you think of, you know, what's really going on with an open mind, not just my attachments, missing his association, such a wonderful person. But he's gone on to another situation of service where the physical limitations of embodiment and so forth of that particular body that he had were lifted. He had another situation to go to. Or so many other examples. If you look at the situation through a lens of spiritual understanding and spiritual wisdom, it's one picture. Death. Just transit of the soul. And the other is an unfulfilled, you know, a glorious life that he didn't get to live it. So much years and years and years of preparation and training that he had received. He was a wonderful person who had been able to do wonderful things. And gone. But somewhere else doing those wonderful things. So if you think on the spiritual platform, it's one approach, and on the material platform, it's pain, suffering. You have any thoughts on this you want to share with us? Huh? No? Okay, Jagat. You're blushing. Go over to the next question. Jagatananda.
Actually, mentioning yesterday that the process of hearing and chanting is a means of purification or changing the desires.
What
I heard today is the purification is primarily of the mind and the intelligence, so that the natural order.
Yes, but it starts at the platform of the soul.
So is all this happening at a transcendental realm? I mean, how does the actual chanting and hearing process, how does it do all
that? It acts on the soul. And when the soul awakens and enlivens, the coverings diminish. Just like, so you have a light bulb, and you can paint the covering around whatever you call that thing, the fixture, paint it red, paint it black, paint it green, and then so the light will come out. But inside, there's the tungsten filament is burning white. So as you increase the brightness of the lamp, then the way that the coverings of the soul from the stage of the soul, as the soul becomes illumined to its natural capacity, the coverings diminish. The modes of nature slacken and move towards the position of goodness and then transcendence, pure goodness, no mixture. The coverings are there because we desire to turn away from the Supreme. So to satisfy our desire, the material arrangements, the configuration of matter is made such that our desires are reciprocated with. The configuration of matter goes in the other direction. It's removed, slackened and removed, as our desire to approach the Supreme in love of God becomes manifest, stronger and stronger. That with spiritual health, material, with spiritual, from spiritual well-being, material well-being follows like a shadow. Last question.
Maharaj, you said that
The mind carries the consciousness today.
The mind carries the soul.
I thought it's the soul which carries the consciousness.
Soul carries consciousness. The soul and consciousness are concomitant. Just like light and the sun are inseparable. Consciousness and the soul are inseparable. Wherever there's a soul, there's consciousness. Or wherever there's consciousness, there's a soul. The soul is carried. The soul that identifies with the covering of matter is carried from one situation to the next situation, even in our present life, or from one life to the next life, is carried by the subtle body. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. The whole package just is carried, and with it the soul, because the soul is identifying.
So in the analogy, the air carries the aroma. So what is the air representing? Soul or the mind?
The mind. And the aromas is the conceptions of life. That's the, and in that analogy, the mind carries different conceptions of life, as the air, like the mind, carries different aromas, like conceptions of life. Don't get confused by, it's not a one-to-one metaphor. Analogies are limited and imperfect. It's to give us an idea of something that's within our experience, from within our experience, something that's outside of our experience. It's not a pervasive thing. It's just an indication. It's in that direction, kind of a thing. So because mind is mentioned in this metaphor, don't try to make a one-to-one correlation between that and this other idea. Because it isn't. It's just a metaphor to help understand something. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.